Thank you. Well, once again, good morning to everybody. Hope you could refresh yourself now with a strong coffee so that you can stand my speech. I have been asked to present prospects for cooperation on Euratom reform between non-nuclear and nuclear phase-out countries in the European Union. And I assume that many of you are looking forward to learn about past experience and, even more importantly, future prospects on how to set up a real anti-nuclear coalition on governmental level. And some of you certainly would like to know a fast track to abolish the Euratom treaty altogether. Being a civil servant of a small and reportedly anti-nuclear member state, I should be the right person to do so. I will disappoint you. I will not meet your expectations. Why? Simply because such an anti-nuclear coalition would be counterproductive. It would almost immediately force the forging of a pro-nuclear coalition, leading to posturing of both sides and an almost indissoluble stalemate. You could argue that this stalemate is already lasting on for a long, long time. Yes, that's true. But what we need now is a move forward, hopefully a breakthrough, and not another stalemate. Of course, there have been and there will be coalitions of European governments. But according to my experience, coalitions are rapidly changing and usually focused on specific issues. And they last as long as you need it to achieve a certain goal or a specific issue, and then it's gone. In this context, I would like to recall the issue of nuclear safety in the context of enlargement. It already has been mentioned today by one of my previous speakers. Already well before the start of the accession negotiations in spring 1998, it was clear that nuclear safety is an issue. But how to deal with it? The EU opening statement for accession negotiations contained a tiny reference to nuclear safety, but no clear message to the then candidate states, simply because we hadn't any piece of acquis communautaire in this field, in particular with nuclear safety, and we still do not have even today. It also has been reported earlier today that the Commission proposed a directive in this respect, but the Council failed to act on that. Later on that year, in 1998, the Commission published a communication from the Commission to the Council and the European Parliament on nuclear sector-related activities for the applicant countries of Central and Eastern Europe and the new independent states. But that basically mentioned the various activities of the Commission at that time, the various programs, what the Commission thinks has been achieved already and what should be achieved in the future. And then by the end of the UK presidency, in late spring 1998, we have been addressed by our UK colleagues on the issue. They were considering Council conclusions, which is a political statement by the Council. It's not legally binding, but it's a strong signal on a certain issue by the Council on the subject, and proposed to us to continue to work on a pertinent draft during our presidency in the second half of 1988. And during the summer of 1998, we developed a joint UK-Austrian draft text. What did we do next? Did we talk to our Irish friends? Peter, forgive me. No, we did not. Did we talk to our Danish, Greek colleagues, or to our very like-minded friends in Luxembourg? No, we did not. We went to Paris. Yes, we went to Paris and talked to a number of colleagues from various ministers there, and in particular to the French chief regulator. He was at that time chairman of the WENRA, that is the Western European Nuclear Regulators Association, a club of the most powerful nuclear regulators here in Europe. And we were able to convince them that UK and Austria had drafted a balanced and sensible text. And only then we put officially forward our draft proposal for Council conclusions on nuclear safety in the context of enlargement of the European Union, as the full title goes. Of course, it took another few months and in-depth discussion then in the Council working groups to arrive at a consensus text. But at least what I learned, the lesson I learned from this experience is, first talk to those who are presumably your opponents and look for common ground, and then talk to your friends. By the way, this is exactly what the community law is inviting or even forcing us to do, at least in the nuclear sector. It already has been mentioned today that any change to the Euratom Treaty must be a unanimous decision. So we are forced to talk to each other and not to confront each other. These council conclusions then were the first guidance for the candidate countries on council level, and then later on, as I think Peter already told, they were followed by these general and country-specific recommendations contained in the report on nuclear safety in the context of enlargement. And after examining all the replies by the candidate states, with the final peer review status report. And yes, we had to compromise, and we had long-lasting debates in the various council working groups and subgroups and so on dealing with the issue. But even as an Austrian, I'm convinced that this process led to real improvements in nuclear safety in new member states. And even in terms of phase-out, it has been partially successful, leading to the closure of first-generation plants of Russian designs in new member states. I mean, we are not yet at the end of the story. We have to note that, because not all of the units have already reached the date foreseen in the protocols to the accession treaty. And as at least some of you might know, at least one of the new member states for about a year tried to convince the Commission and the member states that it's not a good idea to have a phased shutdown, but would like to close two units at one date, and of course at a later date for the two units. But finally, they had to realize that this is community law and that there's no way to discuss it. So I'm quite confident that these closure commitments will be met. Well, but let's come back to the issue of Euratom reform. Almost exactly 3 years ago, I had the pleasure to address a similar conference in Brussels. And by that time, I at least personally put some hopes into the Convention on the Future of Europe. As it turned out, I have been overly optimistic. Despite endeavors by some members of the Convention and interesting contributions to the debate, and in this context, of course, I would refer particularly to contribution by Austrian members of the Convention, but also to the so-called Penelope paper elaborated on the auspices of the Commission. That is a very interesting paper, which had an annex with some ideas on changing the Euratom Treaty. But I have to admit, it was never ever an official Commission paper. It was just elaborated under the auspices of the Commission. But anyway, the Convention failed to properly address the nuclear issue. Finally, as already mentioned today, the Convention proposed to adjust the Euratom Treaty by means of a protocol to the Constitution. And in the final draft treaty establishing a constitution for Europe, the protocol amending the Euratom Treaty merely provides for unified institutional and financial provisions of the Euratom Treaty, but leaves it with a separate legal personality, as said today. The Convention's presidency report, and that's interesting to read, concluded that although some members wished to re-examine and perhaps update the provisions of the Euratom Treaty, the Convention did not believe it had either the mandate or the time and competence to do so. The future of the Euratom therefore remains an issue which the European Council may wish at some stage to address. The following IGC then basically left things unchanged. Although we had a lengthy debate of legal experts on this protocol, it finally resulted in what has been proposed by the Convention already in a protocol to the Constitution amending the Euratom Treaty. In principle, decision-making procedures are harmonized with those foreseen in the Constitution. But if you take a closer look, and it took us and the legal experts of our ministry and in other ministries in Austria quite some time to get through provision by provision, there are almost no cases to apply these new procedures. Because for most decision-making processes, the procedures are firmly set down in the Euratom Treaty, and they are not changed by the Constitution. So it looks like you would have decision-making procedures involving the European Parliament by applying these procedures from the Constitution to the Euratom Treaty, but in practice it almost probably will not happen. So, when analyzing the current situation, it has also to be taken note of the fact that the European Court, in a rather revolutionary decision, ruled that Article 30 to 39 of the Euratom Treaty cover not only radiation protection, but also nuclear safety. Also that has been mentioned today already. In the view of the court, it is not appropriate, in order to define the community's competences, to draw an artificial distinction between the protection of the health of the general public and the safety of sources of ionizing radiation. The Commission based her proposal for nuclear safety directive on this ruling, but for the time being, there's no sufficient majority in the Council to adopt the proposal. And it's also not in the foreseeable future. I mean, finally, we set up again a number of working groups, because if we don't know what to do, then we set up a working group to think about what we cannot do or what we might do and so on. And these working groups will work for at least the end of 2006. So there won't be any significant move on the issue before 2007. Well, nevertheless, the arguments in favor of a substantial reform of the Euratom Treaty are still valid, in our view. Currently, the European Union is faced with a rather unsatisfactory situation. Although the Presidency Report of the Convention indicated that the mandate of the Convention would not have comprised the Euratom Treaty, the European Council of Laeken, in its declaration on the future of the European Union, stated that making the Union more democratic, more transparent, and more efficient, and simplifying the provisions on the objectives, powers, and policy instruments spread across the four treaties with a view to have greater transparency would be central political challenges for the Convention. Nevertheless, the draft constitution treaty perpetuates two separate legal entities, which is not exactly an example for transparent and efficient structures. Secondly, although the Convention's work was guided by a strong commitment to more democratic structures and procedures, it set aside the reform of the Euratom Treaty, thus excluding co-decision by the European Parliament in an entire sect of policymaking. And as I've pointed out before that, although it looks like certain democratic, in the sense of EP participation procedures from the Constitution would apply to the Euratom Treaty, in fact, they don't. And finally, although the European Union is heading for an open, transparent, common electricity market, the nuclear industry, an essential sector of this market, and I mean, we can now discuss how high the percentage of nuclear electricity on the European market is, but it is essential, no doubt about that, continues to be governed by a specific set of rules, thus distorting competition between the different energy sources, no doubt about that. I mean, the very fact that this is a separate entity, a separate procedures and separate provisions, is a certain distortion of the market. Therefore, my government and some others joined in a declaration to the Constitution supporting the idea of a conference of the representatives of governments of the member states, complicated European language, which should be convened as soon as possible to bring up to date the core provisions of the Euratom Treaty, and we still stick to that. On the one hand, from an Austrian point of view, it is a success that altogether five governments supported this declaration, finally, and believe me, it took us a lot of work to get that. On the other hand, this is far off the support needed to even start an intergovernmental conference. And as we said today repeatedly, we need unanimity to change the Euratom Treaty or to integrate those elements which are still needed into a future constitution. And Peter pointed out that yes, there are a number of elements in the Euratom Treaty which you simply cannot throw away. We need it as long as there is nuclear power. And in addition, the results of the recent German elections render the future German position on this issue very much in doubt. So, bleak prospects. What to do now? Well, I think there's a way forward. And although I said I'm pessimist, I always try to find an option to go along. Although the future fate of the Constitution is quite uncertain at the moment, I inter alia with the effect that the provisions regarding a citizens' initiative, which is part of the principle of participatory democracy, will not enter into force very soon. I'm convinced that it is very, very important that the citizens of Europe make their voice heard. And the larger the support and the more countries involved, the bigger the possible impact will be. I mean, in the end, governments react to public interest and to public pressure. Secondly, the European Parliament should be involved even more than it is today, thus adding to the political momentum. I would like to recall that the European Parliament has repeatedly asked for fundamental reform of the Euratom Treaty. With regard to the Constitution, it welcomed the separation of the Adam Treaty from the legal structure of the future Constitution, but urged the Intergovernmental Conference to convene a treaty revision conference in order to repeal the obsolete and outdated provision of the treaty, especially those relating to the promotion of nuclear energy and the lack of democratic decision-making procedures. This is European Parliament, this is not an anti-nuclear NGO ruling. Thirdly, it will be of the utmost importance to engage in an intense dialogue with those currently opposing Euratom reform, be it governments or stakeholders, doesn't matter. The dialogue must be honest. It will be very difficult, and it most probably take years and years. A major prerequisite for those us engaging in this dialogue will be to accept that some member states will not face nuclear power in the foreseeable future, and some might even re-establish nuclear power programs. This is certainly difficult to accept, at least from an Austrian perspective, or maybe for some of you, but with mere confrontation we will never ever reach consensus. So we will have to go for that. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Andreas, also for keeping the time so that we still have some possibilities for questions. But probably it's even smoother to start with a debate and put the questions in there. And this means...
There's a question.
There's one? Okay. Wrong glasses.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your speech. My name is Mette Gjerskov. I am a member of the Danish Parliament for the Social Democrats. We heard earlier this morning also about this possibility to have an intergovernmental conference to end the treaty. But I try to look at it from a Danish opposition politician's point of view. And asking you, do you have any recommendations on what could I do? What are the possibilities and what are the realistic possibilities? I know this is a huge question, but I just had to ask it. Thank you.
I'm afraid I can't give you the advice what to do in the Danish political system. Simply, I don't know nothing about it. I really apologize for that. No, but in substance, I think, as I said, it's important to continue the discussion, and to continue the discussion not only on the level simply saying, well, this Euratom treaty has to be abolished or to disappear. I mean, this is a legitimate position for NGOs. I respect that. Yeah? But even, let's say, from an opposition's point of view, this would not be a realistic political option. So what you have to go for is a sincere discussion. Look for proposals, what to change, how to change, what to keep, to confront them, to enter in a debate on a more scientific, so to say, level, that is with legal experts of various backgrounds and various attitudes, maybe on a parliamentary level. I mean, parliaments from various countries could meet, could join forces, or committees of parliaments of countries could meet and join forces and discuss it at the European Parliament. I have no recipe. Huh? I have no recipe. My core message would be to go into a honest discussion with reasonable proposals, always having in a realistic view on the issue. I mean, again, it's legitimate also to have a fundamental opposition's view, but in terms of real policy, or we need a pragmatic approach, I would say.
Okay.
Charlie Hultén, I'm with the Swedish Anti-Nuclear Movement, an NGO. I've been listening, and I have a question and possibly a suggestion. I think even in the most anti-nuclear NGOs recognize that there are valuable contents in the treaty. What I'm suggesting, and I'd want to do if I could be in a better position, would be to say, let's sit down and think away the treaty. Mm-hmm. The treaty does not exist. We need something to mm-hmm. secure Europe against accidents and one thing and the other. If we could just think away, is there a preparedness in your circles to have such a discussion? Think away and see what we need. And perhaps I find this more in line with the rest of the European legislation, with free energy market and one thing or the other, because the treaty is an anachronism. Why not just sit down and decide what we need instead?
I cannot talk about my circles because my professional circles are 25 member states with absolutely different attitudes to either to nuclear power or to the Euratom Treaty, which is not exactly the same. But let's say from the Austrian perspective, yes, of course. And it would be part of this, let's say, honest discussion and an interesting, let's say, exercise to sit together also with legal experts, because you need then a legal wording for that. To say, okay, what kind of provisions do we need? Peter indicated some of them, but there might be more. It's clear, it's safeguards, it's clear, it's safety, it's radiation protection, that's clear. And let's have this idea, nothing is there, what would you create? And then benchmark this against existing provision and say, okay, if we change this or modify that, and that we do away and so on. It would be an interesting exercise. Could be part of a conference, symposium, things like that. But somebody would have to sit down to write that, or to commission somebody to write that. But that, of course, that's an interesting proposal.
Jetzt haben wir da was zu.
I'm Lea Lanukari, I'm from Finland. I'm an activist in Women Against Nuclear Power. And you all know the situation in our country. You were talking now about the cooperation between non-nuclear powers and non-nuclear phase-out countries. Have you had any or what kind of discussions or any contacts with the nuclear power states, as Finland, for instance? I mean, we are really in a big, big trouble. So all new suggestions or new ideas what to do with the situation in Finland are welcome.
Again, I don't think I'm the right person to give any advice what to do in Finland at the moment. But yes, of course we have contacts with nuclear power countries. I mean, this is my day-to-day business to talk to them. Sometimes confrontational, not sometimes it's cooperation, depending on the issue. Sometimes we find common ground. I mean, I showed you just one example where, yes, indeed, I think we achieved something in working together. But one thing is absolutely clear. International law, as well as the European treaties, guarantee each state to decide on its own energy policy. So I do have, as an Austrian government, I do have to respect if Finland, whoever Finland, decides to go nuclear. The only thing what I can do and what I have to do is, in terms of the protection, as I'm an Austrian civil servant, of Austrian environment, Austrian people, to say, okay, if you're going to go nuclear, then you have to guarantee to me, or to do your utmost, that I'm not affected by your decision. But this is, from Austria to Finland, a little bit too far off. I mean, we did our calculations even for that case, but this, you cannot construct, not within with a type of reactor which should be built in Finland. That's impossible. It's physically impossible to claim that we would be affected by that decision. It's different with our neighboring countries, and I know that because we have our ongoing disputes with them. There's nothing to do. I mean, in terms of a European policy, of course, we would like to see uniform or harmonized European safety standards to ensure the utmost protection of people and the environment as long as nuclear power is there. And supposedly, will be there for quite some time. But I'm afraid this is not of much help to you.
Okay, final question. Rebecca Hans.
So you are, as a man from Austria, in a very good position because you are preparing now the presidency of the European Community for next year. Mm-hmm. So you can 6 months have some more influence on energy policies in Europe. Maybe, huh? It's my first period in the parliament and I have not so much experience with the presidencies. But if in preparing this presidency, what is in the focus of the Austrian government? Is it the treaty or are there other targets for energy policy which are really important and which could get some influence? Because I must admit that I feel, if I look on the decisions taken for fusion and for ITER, we are not a majority on the European level against Euratom. Maybe for against fission, there could be a weak majority in Parliament, but not in the European Union. And therefore, I'm wondering whether we should talk about other targets for the next interim period. We should talk about the time of these periods, but I think there are other issues which could be better also for the public debate on nuclear or energy policies than the treaty is. And for example, during this presidency, you will have the 20th anniversary of Chernobyl, which will happen then, and you are taking over a situation with a debate on market concentration. You are taking over in a situation with a big but still covered debate on state aid connected to decommissioning. So there are interesting issues on the European level, and you could work on this.
Thank you very much for that question. I love it. First thing, and I'll be really blunt, being in the presidency is the worst situation to put your own agenda you could ever have. You're forced to make the compromises, to enable the compromises you need to go forward. And that in particular holds true for the 7th Research Framework Program. The Framework Program, being based on the EC Treaty or the Euratom Treaty, requires a unanimous decision. And you as the presidency are not the one to block that decision. This is simply not the case. Yeah? So this is not exactly, let's say, good ground to move things forward. But although the European Parliament has no co-decision in the Euratom research programs, the European Parliament has some power in the exercise that in the past on the budget, because there's, and that maybe replies to one of the questions raised this morning, there's only one community budget. There's no Euratom budget. There's only one community budget, and certain budget lines or certain issues on that have either a legal basis in the EC Treaty or in the Euratom Treaty, and sometimes even both. and all of the budget is discussed in the European Parliament and year by year. And there have been cases in the past where the European Parliament felt not to be consulted enough on the research program, and they simply blocked the money for months, which put the Council in a very uncomfortable position. In general, the Austrian presidency, and that is not my personal business, but in general, the Austrian presidency will be faced with the financial perspective, which will be difficult enough, and will be faced with the future of the constitution, which will be difficult enough as well. And in particular, for example, the decision on the framework program, research framework program, only can be taken once the financial perspective is in place, because you simply cannot take any important financial decision, and the framework program is, in terms of money, it's quite a bit junk. I mean, not compared to agriculture and in infrastructure, but in the internal politics, it's quite a bit junk. So nobody will be ready to agree to a certain amount for money for something unless a financial perspective is in place. In the nuclear field, we're simply going to be pragmatic. And again, well, what is also important to know, as a presidency, you could start one or the other political initiative. For example, as we did in 98, we proposed this council conclusion. That is a room maneuver for a presidency, but you need something where you could see consensus arising or possible, otherwise you couldn't do it. On all the other things, you're dependent on the proposal by the Commission, because it's the sole right of the Commission to propose a legislative act. And as long as they do not propose something, you as a president have nothing to negotiate. So we are in the hands of the Commission to have a basis to do a good job. With regard to Euratom reform, the official position currently is that it is on our agenda. We know the situation, but if there is any window of opportunity, we will use it. I have to add that currently I have difficulties to see that window of opportunity, but